The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Faster my good afternoon. Man in Line today is all about education, sport and culture with the Education, Sport and Culture Department. So if you have a question about anything that comes under DESC, by all means do get in touch. You can call 66 13 68, text or WhatsApp on 166 177, email studio@manxradio.com. And we're live today with the Minister and two department members. So, first of all, let's say Fastamai, good afternoon to the Minister, Daphne Kane, MHK. Fastamai.
Fastamai, Andy.
Good to see you. Also, Sarah Maltby, MHK member.
Fastamai.
And Paul Crane, MLC. Hi, Paul.
Fastamai.
Okay, first of all, we've got to get to this, Daphne Kane, because obviously the announcement from the UK government this morning that next year social media is going to be restricted to over 16s only. Did you see that coming, and what's your opinion of it?
I see that announcement. I think that that is a significant policy decision by the UK government, and there is obviously perhaps time for the Isle of Man to have that policy discussion to see whether that's something we follow. Obviously, we have a policy of with mobile devices within schools, that is the for phones that they are off and away, so students may have them with them. They may use them for medical reasons and other exemptions, but otherwise, during the school day, within our schools and our education system, we have determined that mobile devices are not to be used for social media or any other use within schools on school premises. Now, for me, the when you look at other countries, Australia, and the bans they bring in, and for very good reasons. So we all appreciate the impact on young minds of access to mobile phone apps, to social media in particular, and the impact it has potentially on mobile on mental health and on learning. Also at risk personally in terms of who are able to access, you know, and there's a safeguarding piece around that as well. So I do think it's timely that the UK government considers it. I don't think the Isle of Man would consider going off unilaterally if the UK government weren't doing it. I do have concerns as to how they will police it when you hear that, you know, young people are usually more tech savvy than the parents, and by a simple way of putting a false age on access information, or even setting up your own VPN, virtual private networks, around use. So there's a big discussion, and it's very worthwhile to have it. I'd be interested in the wider community, knowing that when we first introduced the mobile phone policy across our schools, there was a little bit of pushback from the upper end of the students who had had a mobile phone since they started, and smartphone in many cases since they started secondary school. But it's the times we're living in, it is really appropriate to have that discussion, and I welcome it.
Of course, social media has only been with us, what, a little less than 15 years, and of course it affects children, but it also affects teachers as well, because teachers can get a fair bit of hassle on social media. So how does the department approach that?
Obviously there is, sometimes you find inappropriate comments about individuals are posted on social media and on forums. When that's reported to us, the department supports staff obviously in ways they can. I just think that it is ever more ungoverned, that space across social media, and as politicians we come in for a fair bit of the attacks across social media that you see. So I sympathise with anyone who has been named, shamed, or have that sort of toxic pylon that you get sometimes. But it's the world we're living in. We all have to navigate it. And I always think, you know, that's, you go back to your own principles and self-respect. And if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all, just be kind. And there are appropriate channels when people have something to say about a particular teacher or policy or something that's happened in school. And it's much better, I think, all round if people go through proper channels.
Okay. And Sarah Maltby, what's your view on that that policy?
Well, of course, I used to work in a school before I was elected, so it was always the policy of just, you know, don't discuss things online, don't accept friend requests of parents, students, you know, it was kind of always just kind of keep your distance and just be very mindful about what you're actually posting. And so that was what it was when I was at, when I worked in a school, and that's kind of the same policy I've kind of kept to now, really, is just to try and keep social media for what it's there for social, positive posts, something that's interesting but doesn't get into, you can't get into a big discussion online. It's not helpful for anybody and actually causes more upset sometimes for not just yourself, but for the people who may read though that content who don't want to engage with some of the conversations on there. So my policy is just to keep social media for what it was intended to, for social purposes.
Okay, and Paul Crane?
I'm longer in the tooth than these other young ladies, but I came out of the classroom in 1999, so this is years before the iPhone was introduced. But I can understand the issues relating to young people's happiness, relating to bullying, relating to safety, concerns over algorithms which take them down lines. You know, the case we had over the death of Molly Russell and the when it went through to the court inquiry, part of the responsibility for her death was laid on the, at the foot of Instagram and so on, because they had algorithms that she was following, and it was unpleasant. So I think it's absolutely right that something is done. It's going to be interesting to see what comes out in the UK, how well it goes down, how well it sticks. But yeah, it makes a great deal of sense to try and make our young people happier and safer.
Well, as you say, to anybody, and again, I trained as a teacher in the 1970s, you know, and the worst there was a chalk message on the board. I mean, social media's put rockets underneath all this. Mm-hmm. And as Sarah Maltby said, you know, the reasonable people are fine. Yeah. Paul, it's the idiots and the malevolent people, you know, and this could be fellow pupils, it could be parents, it could be anything. So the whole education system is, if you like, almost under attack from the bad side of social media. I mean, can you see the wood for the trees for this?
Yes, I would say when you say it's under attack, it's only under attack if you're constantly on Facebook reading it. You know, I try to keep off Facebook, right. And I'm probably happier and more mentally sound for having done so. I'm aware of issues out there. They come through, you know, you get your mail and so on. And that's so easy to email members of Timwell these days. So you're aware of what's going on. But when you look at some of the strategies on some of the social media sites, this notion of rage bait, that somebody's putting something on deliberately to provoke people to come back, and once the people start going over the top, others will respond to that, you know, so it becomes a downward spiral, really, you know. I think it's hard to this is not peer-reviewed articles you're looking at when you look at social media. Yeah. So I don't think you should ever get too hot under the collar about it, but it's hugely disappointing that so many people who clearly don't know what the issues are still happy to sprout off about it.
Okay, got a question now that says, parents with children planning to go to university in September. This is fairly lengthy. We're in the unfortunate position, having been penalised by means of means testing, just falling on the cusp, taking into account both of our incomes. We don't have the funds to support our son because we're divorced, and between us, running two households, two mortgages, two everything, I thought he'd be able to take a student loan towards help his fees and maintenance costs, but student awards tells us it will be a maximum of $3,250 per year he can borrow, and that we need to stump up for the rest of his fees, accommodation and living costs. We're considering both remortgaging to release some funds, but that increases our monthly mortgage costs, and we'll need to be giving him a weekly amount to live on top of our normal monthly budget. We're struggling to figure out how we can do this. It feels like we're stuck between a rock and a hard place, and now I'm really envious of parents who are getting the full student award towards their children's university. Our son's bright, hard grafter. He's predicted A stars, A Bs in his A levels. We really want him to be able to continue his studies, but don't have the have a financial impossibility get in his way. Does anyone have any advice? We can't afford to service personal loans. Any other options, Daphne Kane?
Well, obviously, we've revamped the student awards system for this coming September, although we're still supporting those who commenced previously on the old scheme. And the Isle of Man generally is in a better position than many students in the adjacent island, because for eligible students, accepting that your income would be up to £112,000 income, would enable the full grant, which now is £6,000 of the roughly £9,500 cost of tuition fees to be paid. And yes, the tuition fee, the loan element of that is the part that can be offered as a loan to students. There will always be people who fall one side or another, and that's unfortunate, but we do have a taper to support students as much as we can. And there are other options. You know, I'm in the same situation. I have one, potentially two students who will be looking for further higher education come September, and we will be looking at what's best for them. For some students, I understand there are loans available. Obviously, they're not at quite the same rate, interest rate, of the Isle of Man Student Awards loan elements. And I would say, you know, it cannot be all things to all people. We are lucky that we've retained student awards to support the students who are able to go away and who meet the eligibility criteria. For those higher earning parents, ever since being in this job, it's actually the parents who fall just above the income levels that I hear from most, and I'm very aware of it. The for this September, there will be private loan companies available, and or for some students, they determine they'll take a year travelling or working before starting a university place.
Right. Will those private loan companies, are they recommended by the department?
We don't recommend them, but there are some on island.
Okay. How is means testing for university students calculated?
So in terms of the loan, we have had a significant increase in the income level for students, for households, for students going away to get the whole grant, including the maintenance grant, and that has gone up from £23,500 to £31,000, just over £30,000. And that means that students in those lower income households will be eligible for the full maintenance grant of £8,500, as well as the student fees to be paid at £6,000, and the ability to take out the loan for the difference. We determined this year that we were having the up to the amount of child benefit eligibility, which is £90,000 a year. That maintenance grant tapers off across all that. So even households with around £50,000 or thereabouts, which a lot of households are, they will get some portion of the maintenance grant to support the student going away, as well as the tuition fee and loan on the same sort of 60, two-thirds, one-third almost proportions that all students up to incomes of £112,000 get that full student award.
Okay. Fritzy dropped a note in from 572 and said, could you ask the Minister when the repair to the swimming pool tile floor is likely to take effect? It's now been 3 years since the issue was found and still not repaired. I can't understand why it's taken so long and why it can't be made a priority. Moreover, it's only the middle lane of the pool that's been affected, yet the inner and middle lane are closed off for a full 25 metres. How can this be? Who's responsible for this? And while we're at it, 235 sent in and just said, who writes the NSC timetable for swimming? We find it so hard to fit in swimming lessons between school swimming lessons. Even on Saturday, Sunday, the swimming lanes aren't accessible till 11 a.m. That's from Mary.
All right, well, dealing with the first point, the swimming pool tiles, I completely understand the frustration that NSC swimmers and parents have over the length of time it is taking to deal with this issue. It was actually discovered before I came into post 2 years ago, February, and I was actually down at the NSC pool for a swimming gala on Saturday afternoon for the King's Baton Relay coming round ahead of the Commonwealth Games, had the pleasure of meeting and speaking to some of our best swimmers who will be going away to represent the island. And yes, I heard directly from them and parents and the swimming officials how very disruptive it is. Having the two lanes out even while the gala is going on, you can imagine, makes all those heats take so much longer by having the two spaces. It's been done because when you look at the state of the tiles, because of the risk to swimmers should they land on it and should any more tiles become loosened, the time it's taking to progress, we are going through all the proper processes that we need to go through to ensure that we are able to bring the repairs as soon as we possibly can. And the department, everybody involved at the NSC too, we all want to see this resolved as soon as possible. But there is also going to have to be the timing to make sure, because that's going to be a closure time for the pool to enable the repairs to be done when they are scheduled, and that there will be some discussions on the careful timing of that to have the least impact on swimmers. And in terms of your timetabling, that will be the NSC that does it. There are a lot of demands and a very high usage. I mean, we've got, it's a fantastic facility to have the National Sports Centre in Douglas. I mean, I was actually working in the old Department of Tourism and Leisure when that opened and handled all the promotion when I think it was Minister David Cretney who opened in 1997. It has phenomenal amount of use. The team down there will juggle everything to fit in things like the National Swimming Galas and then the swimming coaches and all the swimming lessons as much as they can. And,
it's been a victim of its own success. It was so good when it started that it's drawn people towards it. So the thing is getting used all the time now, isn't it?
It is. And one of the comments that I was told on Saturday was that, you know, we've had Laura Kinley going away, I think, for swimming the games in over many, many years now. But when the early days sort of, when the NSC opened, there would be one, I think, swimmer going off to Commonwealth Games. Now there are over 20 who the Isle of Man is able to put out there. And that is testament to the fantastic sporting opportunities that we do deliver on the Isle of Man.
OK, so could you possibly give us a timetable for the tiles to be done?
At this moment, no, I'm sorry, I can't. But as soon as we are able to make progress, we will be and making that announcement.
OK, Catherine said, regarding Manx students being better off, I've corresponded with Daphne and Sarah regarding the NHS healthcare bursary, £5,000 per year for UK students who study in an allied healthcare course back in 24-25. Even though it was recommended in a prior conference, the Manx students should also have this with a tie-in to come back to the Isle of Man to work for Manx Care. It was never implemented. Instead, a £10,000 bursary was given to local nursing students, the majority of whom will not have the additional cost of living off the island. Why is this, says Catherine?
It's a health and probably Manx Care proposition, I think, that we're just in the process actually of, with the revamp to the student awards, we have made it so that any bursaries are not taken into account in terms of the income and then the following on reduction into the other the grant and loan elements that a student can get. If Manx Care, and this is a wider government policy, if Manx Care were to offer those bursaries, which I understand is through the NHS on the adjacent island, then they could recruit, interview, appoint certain students to be the beneficiaries of a healthcare bursary to go away to university. That isn't something the Isle of Man has done. I'm not sure if it's something that to be done in the future, because obviously I'm aware of some students who were looking to go to Wales, but the paramedic course that they were looking to go has actually stopped because they have such success from previous years of having the bursaries and having the number of students carry on and in nursing that certain times they have enough supply of the newly qualified students coming through. But for me, that's a wider policy for the island. That isn't something that we offer through the student awards, because ours are the same for all students going away to do courses. But the bursary element, I believe, is something through healthcare.
OK, let's get to the phones now. And David's with us. Hello, David. You're live with the Department of Education, Sport and Culture.
Oh, good afternoon, Andy. I've got a couple of questions, actually. First one is about a Freedom of Information request, which is now going to the Information Commissioner for a decision notice. And I'd like to ask the Minister why she refuses to publish the breakdown of results at King William's College, but does so for each of the state schools on Ireland. And secondly, this one's for Sarah Maltby, because she's also a DfE member, if I am correct. Is she aware that the Attorney General has extended the period again by which King William's College has to submit its accounts? So its latest accounts, which should have been with us by the end of February, will now not be with us until the end of July. Is there a problem at King Bill's? Is the £2.25 million a taxpayer get them not enough?
Okay, Minister.
So the first point was about the Freedom of Information request. From memory, I was aware of this, and I think we have a protocol in place that we obviously can provide the information that the department holds that are for our own schools. As part of the process, if we're releasing any information that is KWC from King Bill's, that the department asks if they are happy for us to release the information. And I don't know what was the outcome of that, but as the information has not been forthcoming, I think that perhaps that was not was asked not to be released. But it's not, although the information comes to the department, it is the King William's College data.
Okay, Sarah Maltby.
So I've asked my David. So the question was, do I know why? And the answer was no. I'm not the minister for the department. Obviously, I'm not involved in any of the FOI process either. As a member of the department, we aren't asked for any opinion or advice or anything like that. Those FOIs are dealt with completely separately, as it completely should be. But no, I don't have the answer as to why it's taking so long to get that response.
David?
Yeah, well, I think the Minister's wrong there, because they hold the information, so I'm really looking forward to the Information Commissioner's decision notice on this. The argument cited by the department was the students were entitled to privacy, but obviously students at St Ninian's or Ballacombeen aren't. It's bog standard practice to publish a breakdown. The other way of doing it, of course, is to go to the exam board, which I've had to do in the past to get results data for some of our schools here, because the exam boards will release it for each examination centre. I just wish you guys would be a little bit more transparent, and especially with the King Bill's funding, because this is public money, and I'm really concerned that they're going to come back and ask for more. So you're all going to vote in Tynwald. If they came back and asked for more money, would you support that?
Okay, Daphne Gain?
In terms of King Bill's funding, I believe that was part of a business loan that the Department for Enterprise agreed with King William's College as a major employer in the south of the island.
So it wasn't DESC funding?
It's not desk funding. It was a business loan to a significantly large business in the south of the island, my understanding is, and that was agreed between the Department for Enterprise and King Bill's as a business, not related to education. And in terms of the data, obviously my department goes, we get numerous requests that take significant amounts of time to deal with. The data that has been requested is the King Bill's data.
Okay, all right, final word, David.
Yeah, no, the data is King Bill's data, but it's held by the desk, Mrs. Kane. Simple.
Okay, all right. Thanks for calling today. We're live with the Department of Education, Sport and Culture. I'm Man in Line.
Construction waste today.
Tells recycle for another day.
A builder's skip or two.
Tells skips will bring to you.
At Tells Skip Hire and Waste Disposal in Snugborough, you only pay for the waste you bring. For waste disposal and skips, give us a call on 677 137. That's 677 137. Visit Tells today or find Tells Limited on Facebook.
Call Tells Skips today.
677 137.
Geoffrey, how do you like this composite door from Spectrum Windows?
Oh, good choice, missus. Stylish and hard-wearing. It'll transform the house.
Trouble is choosing the colour. There's so much choice.
How about red? It goes with your eyes.
Anyone would see red living with you, Geoffrey.
For a huge range of solid composite doors in a great range of colours, including red, visit Spectrum Windows, the showroom, Derby Road, Ramsey, or call 817777.
There's monkeys and meerkats, penguins galore. You can meet with a panda, owls, lemurs and more.
The Currax Wildlife Park is open 7 days a week. So book your tickets and experiences online now at currackswildlifepark.im.
A great night's sleep got even better with Zed's Bedding Store. From quality Beldorm bed linen and mattress protectors, fleece and woven throws, to luxury duvets from the fine bedding company, Zed's Bedding Ramsey, next to Isle of Man Bank.
Jerry, what on earth are they doing next door?
It's all right, Margot. Tom and Barbara are just feeding the pigs.
But it's so unseemly, Jerry.
The Service Players present The Good Life at the Gaiety Theatre on the 25th to the 27th of June.
Self-sufficiency in Surbiton. This is The Good Life, Barbara.
Not if you keep letting Geraldine the goat out. Margot will never forgive us.
I'll win her over with a gift of some of our Peapod Burgundy.
Mm-hmm.
The Good Life. Go to villagaiety.com for tickets. Supported by Manx Radio.
The countdown to the 2026 general election is officially on. On Thursday, the 24th of September, you'll get to have your say on who should represent you in the House of Keys for the next 5 years. But what are the things you really want to know from your candidates? How they feel about wind farms? What they do to improve healthcare? Or how they plan to tackle government efficiency? Whatever it is, if you have a burning question for those standing, we want to hear from you. You can find out how and everything else you need to know about the upcoming election on our dedicated election website. Just head to manxradio.com.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
There's a note in from Bernie who said, could you ask the department which schools are declining or which schools are increasing? Because we often hear the fact that some schools may have to close because the roll is getting too low, but other ones seem to be overcrowded. What's going on? Well, the man with the numbers is Paul Crane, MLC.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. I haven't brought all my numbers with me, which is unfortunate. But in general terms now, the last school year, the biggest year group was year 11. Okay, and in general terms, the year groups are going down from then on. This year, that biggest group has moved out. So we're now into sort of decline beginning in secondary schools, unless there's numbers moving in. So the general picture across the island is that secondary school numbers are still growing, primary school numbers are now declining. But there are variations within that. I think that the standard picture is shown there in Peel, where if you look at Peel Clothworkers School, the numbers peaked a couple of years back in the secondary school now, QE2. The numbers are still rising and they're very large. And this is one of the problems of school development and school positioning, because when you have a new housing estate in particular, it boosts young children of primary school age initially, but that wave passes through and beyond. We have got movement into the island at the moment, and that is creating variations in school numbers. In general terms, regional terms on the island, the schools in the north have been declining faster than those in the south. In the south, there's been some growth in some areas. So we do see these variations. But the issue of school size and whether schools should close, there is another factor that's having a major impact on this, and that's as time goes on, we're seeing more children with special educational needs of various sorts, and they are requiring additional staff support in school, and therefore some of the schools that appear to have declining overall numbers actually have got some special needs students who are adding to the need for staff. So it's never as simple as it might look from outside.
You've done the population atlas, and obviously the birth rate is pivotal to a lot of this. So what's the birth rate now on the Isle of Man?
Well, the number of births has dropped from a peak of 1,023 in 2010. Last year it was at 574. So we've seen very nearly a 45% decline in 15 years. So it really is quite remarkable. We're not alone in the world in doing that by any means. There's lots of other countries showing decline. Jersey, in fact, is running just about 2 years behind our trend. You know, they peaked later than we are, and they're not falling quite as fast, but almost as fast. But globally, half the world countries in the world are now in this position of having having below replacement level fertility, and that raises a whole new issue on top of that.
We need children to come in because not enough Manx children are being born.
Yes, that's a fair point. I know it's one that needs greater conversation, I think, in the community. The children coming in would be through migration. We perhaps need to... the Isle of Man's a great place for bringing up a family, but perhaps we need to provide greater support to ensure that it's affordable. You know, you tend to find people, when I say the birth rate's going down, the numbers of births dropping, people will immediately talk about the cost of housing and the cost of childcare, but when you see that globally births peaked just 2 years after us, to 2012, and when you look across the countries of Northern Asia, particularly the Europe and North America, when you see the declines in births going on there, this is far more than just an Isle of Man issue. Right. And that's why in the Population Atlas, I've tried to sort of explain what are the local issues causing this, but what are the wider issues and what are the debates we need to have to change that.
I'm just trying to remember, when were you a teacher? What years were you a teacher?
I was a teacher between 1979 and 99, and then I was an education advisor for the next 16 years. But then I was back working in the school as a data manager after I'd retired for the first time.
I'm just guessing that if you were a teacher in the 70s, you would have taught children who'd got two and three sisters and brothers. You know, there were quite big families back then. So there's been a contraction in the size of families. And is that just a thing that's happening in Western Europe, or whereabouts is that happening?
No, it's global. In fact, the country that's got the lowest what they call the total fertility rate at the moment is South Korea. You know, they're producing just a third the number of babies they would need to be at replacement level. Right. So this is much, much wider than that. And some academics are claiming that it links in with the advent of the iPhone and the amount of time people spend on social media and a number of other things, relationship deficits and so on. But it's also about women having better opportunities and delaying the first birth and then increasing gaps between births or having just one child. And it's about some younger people deciding that this is not a fit world to bring young people into. And that's a factor. You know, I know I've said that to some older people and they've laughed at me, but the evidence is absolutely there.
I mean, it is true. So some young people do stress about bringing a child into the world. Paul, we appreciate that. I want to go to Georgina. Thanks for hanging on. You've been there for ages. Hello, Georgina.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, you're live with the Department of Education, Sport and Culture. Go ahead.
Oh, well, thanks very much for taking my call. I'd like to address this to Minister Kane, if I may. I'm hoping to be able to educate people today as to whether our politicians are able to represent their constituents with truth and integrity, given the constraints placed upon them in certain things like standing orders. I'm also talking on behalf of 8,500 people this afternoon from our community resident group, No Offshore Turbines for the Isle of Man.
Okay. You do know we're talking about education, sport and culture today.
Yes, I'm trying to educate 8,500 people as to what's going on in terms of the electoral process and representation.
Okay, but do you have a specific question about education, sport and culture rather than the wider case of educating people, as you say? Because that's what we're talking about today, schools, culture and the language.
Well, I have some very interesting numbers, but possibly not. You possibly don't want to hear them.
That we don't want to hear them. It's just not appropriate to this program. We're talking about education, sport and culture. You've heard what we've been talking about. Have you got a question?
Yes, I have.
Okay, what's your question?
My question is, how can we educate the population who want to hear from their politicians as to how they're going to go through this election and not talk to their constituents?
Okay, Daphne Kane.
Well, I think this is in the context of the petition for no offshore wind farm Isle of Man, and obviously that is a political issue, but it's not a department issue. In terms of constituency MHK, I am always available to speak to constituents about issues that matter to them. I have met with a number of residents on this particular issue, and in terms of I would always hope that I act with truth and integrity in everything I do. The process for the offshore wind and onshore wind is a different thing altogether, but I am happy and I'm looking forward to the hustings meetings when all candidates will be able to give their views. Okay. In answer to any questions that are raised by constituents.
Okay, we appreciate it. Georgina, thanks for that. I think you got the wrong idea about the programme. There's a WhatsApp now just to say, could you please give an update on what's happening to the Park Road site? Daphne Kane.
We did a...
15 years ago, was it knocked down?
It was. There was a very recent information paper the department was able to put together with other departments, and it has been determined. I think that paper went to be noted by Tim Wald, because Tim Wald asked us to go away and do the work in response to a motion. I think it came from Ms. Farragher. And the determination was that this is the best site in Douglas for a replacement whole site primary school, for a 2-form entry primary school serving as a replacement for Murray's Road and Ballaquail, and which is Skull and Jubilee, isn't it, as a split site school at the moment. But that will be put in the development plans of the Isle of Man school estate generally, but obviously there are a few other that are much higher priority. For instance, we're very pleased that we just recently received planning approval for the 2-classroom extension build to go into Henry Blue Noble.
Okay, so Murray's Road to go, and it will eventually go to Park Road.
There will be probably on a 3 to 5 year programme for investment in our school estate and provisioning appropriately for the future. I visited both Murray's Road and Ballaquail sites of Skull and Jubilee, and I think that the general standard of our schools has exceeded that with some of the newer builds in the out of town and rural areas. And absolutely, I would hope to see in the sort of 3 to 5 year timeline proposals, designs to come forward for a whole school, primary school, 2-form okay. entry on that site, which I think would give better facilities for the children that coming forward in those schools.
And will that be the whole site at Park Road, including the old Bowling Green pub? All that will be flattened?
Well, we haven't done concept designs, or we're not on that road in the development plans as in the same way that we've progressed the more immediate ones, which are the stem block for the Queen Elizabeth II High School and obviously the Castle Rushen High School.
Okay, we're live with DESC today. I can't believe more people aren't concerned about the poverty report that shows children receiving free school meals consistently perform less well than their peers. What does DESC do about this, says James? So we've got Sarah Maltby on that.
This is a bit of a tricky one for me to answer, to be honest. So I'm on the poverty committee, so I'm partly responsible for that report.
Well, it's perfect then.
And I'm also in the Department of Education. This is what happens when you've got people who volunteer their time and want to work hard for the Isle of Man, that you end up having to wear multiple hats. So it has produced a bit of a conflict. So I'm working with the department to and with the poverty committee to establish how we move forward on ensuring that some of the recommendations are supported, or at least if they're amended, that they're amended with a plan in place to actually address some of the issues that the poverty report identified.
Okay. Do children receiving free school meals consistently perform less well than their peers, Sarah Maltby? Do they?
I don't think it's fair to say that's the only reason why they would perform less well than their peers. I think that's one of the it's very hard when your data isn't collected as well as what we might like to on the Isle of Man. I think that's been a problem across government, actually, not just for this area. However, that was something to pin our hat on, I guess is the phrase.
Can I sort of offer something there? Having worked in the education department monitoring some of these things for 16 years, and then in a school working as the data manager for the school, and again monitoring that information for the schools, there are differences between students that are on free school meals and the overall results, but the equation of those things is false, I would say. Indeed, free school meals are not a measure of the problem a family has. They're part of the solution. You know, the free school meal is being provided because of the issues in terms of the income of the household and so on. But there is enormous variety between across all homes, not just those with free school meals, between the level of parental input, the number of books in the house, the amount of time spent sort of reading with young children, etc., etc. All of those things are factors in this. And there are many things that schools do, and some schools been able to demonstrate that despite the high school free school meal figures, they've come out with some extremely good results. You know, Willesden most recently, I was talking to the head last year, and he was saying how their results have gone up in the last year or two from the data that they have, and that's not because the community's changed, but because the school is really pushing in this direction, you know, and that these are things that schools can work on. I think the department hugely aware of this and looking to improve the performance of all students, but part of the picture of that is that you have to work where you find misconceptions and low levels of attainment when you're working with children. Don't let that accumulate. You know, work with it from an early age, really, and try to bridge gaps that are opening up before they get too big, you know, as part of the picture. But, it's a huge issue. It's a live issue. We're aware of it in the department, and the officers in the department fully aware of it, too.
OK, but we're with the Department of Education, Sport and Culture today. Sarah Motley, MHK, Paul Crane, MLC, and the Minister, Daphne Kane, MHK.
Got a nice motor to sell? Come and see us.
We are number one. We are family run. Mike's Motors. Mike's Motors.
At Mike's Motors, we don't just sell nice motors, we buy them too. So if you have a nice camper van, motorhome, car, van or commercial vehicle, we'd love to take a look at it. And if we like it, we'll make you a nice offer. Get in touch, visit mikesmotors.im or call 823 200.
Mike's Motors.
That's 823 200.
Find a hidden gem in the Isle of Man, the Abbey Restaurant Ballasalla. This old country house offers a relaxed and sophisticated atmosphere where you can wind down with unique and interesting fresh food and drinks. From dinner with fine wines to tea and exquisite cakes. Enjoy our fantastic lunch menu with fresh specials or join us for afternoon tea and dinner. To book, click the abbey.im, find the Abbey on Facebook or call 822-393.
Big Red Storage in Tramode and Ronaldsway offers secure self-storage units in various sizes with ground floor options and 24/7 access. Check offers and prices using our online space calculator at bigred.im or call 640040.
Your mission, Saturday the 20th of June. Rendezvous at the Villa Marina Gardens from 1300 to 1700 hours. Salute our armed services and have a great time with the family. It's Armed Forces Day 2026. Your chance to say thank you to our service personnel and families, past and present. With free activities for the kids, veterans, charity stalls, military stands and more. Entry is free and there's free afternoon tea for everyone. Show your support.
Manx Radio Summer of Football, brought to you by Walton's Electrical Store.
And with all the action now well underway across the USA, Canada and Mexico, we've teamed up with Walton's to give you the chance to win a 55-inch TV. To win, all you have to do is work out the famous footballer in the weekly post that will be pinned to the top of the Manx Radio Facebook page. Then listen out to greatest hits every weekday evening from 7 and Saturday live between 1 and 5 each weekend until the 19th of July for your chance to get your name in the big prize draw.
Enjoy a better picture with a new TV from Walton's for perfect football enjoyment. Walton's have offers across a wide range of TVs and electrical items in store.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
And Department of Education, Sport and Culture, Oliver says, the Minister has previously said that her department needs to improve how it tracks data regarding university students. What progress has been made? The department's clearly able to contact students as it sends emails promoting programmes such as STEP. So why not send simple surveys to gather information? The government invests significant amounts in supporting students, and these statistics are vital for the island's future planning and workforce development. What's the latest, Minister?
In terms of the destination data, the department collects data at the end of the compulsory education, so that's year 11, and we have very good data on the destination of how many, and it's very a high proportion, who now go into sixth form, those who go into work, which is pretty small, or UCM, and then the tiny, tiny amount who may be unemployed. But beyond that, yes, we keep in contact with students for the purpose of the student awards and then follow-up loans, but we don't collect data, and there's no obligation on them to supply the data in terms of that broader picture of monitoring how well students do over the next 10 years and their income levels or their sort of success or the fields of work they go into. That would be a much bigger piece of research. I don't know if Mr. Crane might have more of an insight.
Yeah, the things I would sort of add into that really is when, in terms of monitoring how students are doing at university, you really don't get partway data. You know, the only sort of solid information is what happens at the end of the degree, whether they've got a first, a 2-1, 2-2, etc. And that sort of information is not automatically accessible to us. By the time the students receive it, they are no longer getting grants, etc. They're no longer part of our organisation, and I'm not sure how kindly they take to being monitored. Now, we do have information when students drop out, when they fail courses, and students can be asked to repay if that's the position, if they seem to have contributed to that or not notified the department early enough and so on. But it is quite a difficult area, but I don't think you'd find for any area in the UK that local education authorities would be in a position to tell you what the outcomes were from
students. Well, education's a non-tangible output. It's not something you can actually count. It's not like widgets or nuts and bolts and what have you. Yeah. So is there a concept at all within the department of value for money, of how much is spent on university grants and awards and what have you, and what the Isle of Man actually gets back?
Yes, of course there is, and that's a much wider than an Isle of Man interest thing. In terms of this, some of the universities actually charge higher fees, and there are real questions about whether they're value for money. I think we've still got one or two universities where you can't get the grants towards for the tuition because they're charging higher fees than others are with limited justification. So it's never sort of straightforward, but yeah, value for money all the time. And indeed, that's something that students are voting with their feet over. You know, the numbers going to university now is lower than it was some years ago, not way back. You know, when I went to university, it was only the 5 or 10% of students that were getting to university each year. Then we reached peaks of 50, and we're now down to 40s or under 40s and so on, or lower than that in some areas.
Why is that?
I think some people are saying in the current employment crisis, with the problems you have with unemployed graduates and graduates taking jobs that are well below the level they're qualified to take, there are some students who look at it and say, well, I don't think I'm going to go to university. And indeed, in the Isle of Man, there are some tremendous opportunities if you join up with some of the insurance companies and so on. By the time you're 21, 22, you may have actually got a degree via work you've done along the way, but you've actually been earning for 3 or 4 years as well. So there really are opportunities like that.
Okay, final question. Julian, you're live with the Department of Education, Sport and Culture.
Hi, Andy, and hello, Daphne, Sarah and Paul.
Pastor Mike, Julian.
Hi.
Hello.
Hiya. Probably my question may well be for Paul, as he's the demographer. What I'd like to ask you is, how important do you think it is to retain Manx culture on the island and don't let it get diluted? And your other point that you mentioned earlier was that the birth rate on the island is very low. I noticed that the European countries, all of them, are also below the replacement level. And the top countries in the world that are way above, so obviously lots of birth rates, in order, according to the UN, are Chad, Somalia, Republic of Congo, Central African Republic, Niger, Mali, Angola, Burundi, Afghanistan, Mozambique, Nigeria, Ghana, Ivory Coast, Burkina Faso, Niger, Togo, and Benin. Are you looking at those countries to bring people in who are above the birth replacement rate, which Europe and the UK are not, and the Isle of Man?
In terms of what I'm looking at is perhaps a material. I do the work on demographics, but I don't have any specific role in our visa links. But we have just gone through a major change in May. We've changed the immigration system, the visa system into the Isle of Man. The requirement now that if you're looking to bring in staff, you have to advertise for a fortnight within the island, then a fortnight within the common travel area, which is basically the British Isles, before you can advertise abroad. In terms of bringing people in from outside, there are changes in the levels of salary that are required for the jobs to bring them in. So there has been quite a tightening of migration, with further tightening perhaps to come if we're required to align, as seems likely to be the case, with the UK to preserve the integrity of the common travel area. So I think that's an area of change. But you mentioned you started with Max culture in schools. I think that's hugely important, you know, and the department pushes that hard. You know, one of the things I'm on at the moment, I've got three lessons lined up in the next 10 days or so, going into schools, looking at aspects of the island's population that they want to cover. One school is wanting to do it for GCSE students. They're wanting something on population ageing and trying to use the Isle of Man as an example. Another school looking at sixth form. In one school, it's sociology that are interested because of the work they have to do with demographics. So covering all aspects of the heritage, history, culture of the Isle of Man is important in our schools, and our teachers recognise that.
Okay, just briefly, if you will. Thank you, Julian. Thanks for the question. Just briefly, if you would, Paul Crane. A question just saying, is teaching Manx value for money? Surely, isn't it better to use the time to on a universally useful subject?
Teaching Manx is absolutely value for money. You know, it's as if it's like saying if you were responsible for the last animal species on the planet or whatever, would you preserve them? We can't let Manx go. It's such a part of our heritage and our culture. And learning a language develops the mind in so many different ways. You know, it absolutely makes sense, and it makes it easier to learn other languages. So I'm absolutely supportive of the teaching of Manx and the attempts to increase the awareness of it here. It's a huge asset that we've got. I think there's more people making a living out of Manx now than there have been for 150 years or something. But
okay.
Yeah, totally on board.
Thanks for talking to us today. And Daphne Kane, you knew I was going to ask this, so I will. Will you be standing in the constituency of Garth in September?
Well, this role has been one of the biggest honours of my life.
You've got 10 seconds.
And I'm happy to confirm that, yes, I will be seeking re-election in the constituency of Garth.
Thank you to the Department of Education, Sport and Culture. By the way, we're live at QE2 on Wednesday. An open line tomorrow.
WINT.